Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 28. Welcome to this episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. One of the most important tasks architects should be doing to improve the success of their firms is to develop strong business systems that will allow them to quickly perform the routine everyday tasks of running a busy architecture firm. The quickest and maybe the most effective way to do this is to leverage the power of software developed to perform these tasks with ease and efficiency. Stephen Burns is an architect who saw a need for such an application and set out to create a software package that managed most every aspect of running his own small firm. Several years later, his software became his business, and that business was eventually acquired by BQE Software, where today, Stephen is the Chief Creative Officer. I've wanted to speak with Stephen for a while now about ArchiOffice, the software he developed. To learn more about how it works and how it may help us small firm entrepreneur architects build better businesses. So let's get right into it. Here's my interview with Stephen Burns, FAIA of BQE Software. Stephen Burns, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Thank you very much, Mark. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much for being here with me. We met a while back. You had you were the guest blogger on Entrepreneur Architect back when I was writing the Entrepreneur Architect Academy blog post series, and you were kind enough to write a 3-part post on financial management for small firms, which has been wonderfully received at the time and all the way through to today. I still get people going back to that. I think it's a very valuable resource that you did for us.
I'm glad to hear that.
I'd like to get into your story, you know, before we get too much into what you do and why you do it. But I'd like to kind of get into your story of becoming an architect and talk a little bit about your journey to where you are today.
Oh, sure. So it's not the enough about me. Let's do more about me. Okay, we'll focus on me for a moment here. I didn't discover architecture actually until I was a little older, a little later in life. I was nearly finished with my undergraduate studies as a fine arts major. I was a sculpture candidate, so got my undergraduate degree in fine art and sculpture. And it wasn't until I was a senior that I really realized I got to make a living. So I decided, since my sculpture was actually quite large, they were essentially rooms you walked into, that I could prolong the education experience and delay going out into the workforce by studying architecture. So I went on to go to grad school. I did my first year of master's program in architecture at MIT, and didn't quite fit me. And so I transferred over to Harvard to the Graduate School of Design, and finished up the 3.5 year program there, graduating way back in 1986. And so at that point, I decided to start off my career in Chicago, and I left Boston, took the U-Haul with all my belongings and moved to Chicago. And I started at Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, SOM, and had 7 years there, had some of the greatest experiences any young architect could hope to have. Got an opportunity to live in London for a year and Berlin for a year and a half. And then I decided it was time to open my own office. And my wife and I were about to have our first child, and I thought this would be a good a time as any to go off and try something before, you know, the responsibilities became too great at home. So I opened up my firm in 1993 and took a partner. After about a month of working alone, I realized I wasn't well suited to be a sort of a lone architect. I really liked working with people and in teams. And I sought out another architect who I had known through his wife, worked at SOM with me. And so we'd gotten to know each other socially. And I knew he had been at his firm for 9 years at that point, and suggested that maybe now would be a good time for him to go out, you know, with me, and we can create a firm together. So that was the start of Burns and Beryl Architects. So my good friend Gary Beryl and I opened our office about a month later after I went out on my own. And that's how we started. So we just started, the two of us. We got a little tiny office space in Chicago and slowly grew. About 2 years later, we kind of outgrew our space. There were five of us crammed in 700 square feet, and we decided to step up a little bit. We rented large office space in a loft building, and at that point grew to about 14 people, and were subject to the problems of landlords and their changing rent. And so we decided to finally buy a space of our own. And so we bought our own building and moved our office there. But at the same time, as we were practicing and the firm was growing, we were doing predominantly high-end single-family residential work, small commercial projects, some restaurants, some boutique hotel work. But for the most part, it was really geared towards that high-end residential market, which is, by the way, one of the great markets to always be in, because it's really always doing well. There's always somebody making money, regardless of how the general economy is going, and they spend it on themselves. That's another story. But anyway, at the same time, I had started to find out that I wasn't loving the fact that I had to run a firm. I really thought of myself as a design architect and loved the process of design and sketching and drawing and that normal routine that we all imagine is what, you know, the quintessential architect does. But since I was the firm founder and really kind of was on my shoulders to make sure the firm was running, and I found that it was distracting, to getting in the way of me getting to spend the time doing what I really love to do. And as an architect, we all know that, you know, design is oftentimes the solution to our problems. So I thought that getting the right software for my firm to manage the business would free me up. And as I went through this process of trying to research, and of course we were small, and this was actually in 1997, so we'd had the firm for 4 years at that point, and didn't really have the kind of money to spend on expensive technology. So I decided, well, I'll design my own software. It started as naively as that. I didn't realize what was going to be involved in doing that, but that turned into a 3-year journey of learning and getting other people's solutions for other purposes and deconstructing them and trying to figure out how to write code. And it was sort of an obsession, you know, from 8 p.m. at night, you know, sort of after dinner and the family going to, you know, putting the kids down to 3 or 4 every single morning. I was obsessed with building this code for a program to run my firm, to do all the management things, to handle all of our client issues, to run our projects, to deal with our billing, to, you know, for our staff to do their time card, and to handle a lot of other things. And so after about 3 years, and every night, you know, the guys at the office would say, hey, that looks great. Can you make it do this? And I go home and make it do that and bring that into the office the next day. But we had hired, I think at that point, we had hired a fellow who was maybe employee number 11, if I recall correctly. It was about the year 2000 and or 1999. Anyway, he used to work for another architect. And so he called up his old boss and he said, hey, these guys at Burns & Beryl are using this software that you always said you wished you had something that would do this. And what ended up from that discussion is he introduced himself to me and asked to come see it. And after seeing what it had done for my firm, he asked if he could buy it. And interestingly enough, he was also a competitor of ours. But I'm friendly in that regard. And I said, look, it's not a commercial grade software product, but let me just clean it up and give me 3 months and let you put it in your office and see how it works out for you. So after a year of his firm using our software, he said, hey, this really has made a difference in my life. Can I invest in this? Can we make it a commercial product? Which changed everything in my life. At that moment, what happened was I got my normal life back because no longer was I going to be the developer, the programmer. We put our money together. We hired real programmers, which actually was kind of interesting because, you know, if you're an architect, you've probably had clients come in and they've got their own sketches and they've done their own drawings or whatever, and they're very fond of them. And you look at them and roll your eyes or try not to let them see you roll your eyes. But I realized after hiring real development people, what a terrible programmer I was. So it was, you know, how a beautiful set of working drawings really has no redundancies. You know, there's always one reference and you edit it once and it's always, you know, propagates out throughout the set of drawings. But for me, going on a 3-year journey of writing software, I kind of didn't know where I was going with the software. And so I would, every time I would have a need, I would rewrite the same code over and over and over again to do things without referencing back. But that was funny to see the developers roll their eyes at me like I used to roll them at my clients. But they spent about 2 years, maybe almost 3 years, taking my prototype and turning it into a commercial software product. We call the product ArchiOffice, and we got it finally out into the market in April of 2003, which coincided with the AIA convention in Chicago that year. And no, I think it's 2004. Maybe it was April 2004. So we got a booth, and we just started selling our software, and it went like hotcakes, and it was kind of took off on its own. But what happened was in 2006, I had hired a management consultancy to look at our software business and help advise me as to what to do with it. My hope was that they would come in and manage it and find a CEO and, you know, allow me to really go back and continue to just being an architect. But at the end of their research, they recommended that I move into the business full time. So this was May of 2007, and I thought I was just, you know, turning 50, and I thought this would be a great next chapter in my life. I had 14 years. I'd been running the architectural firm. I had the 7 years at SOM before that, and I thought, you know, this might be kind of an interesting thing to try. I am sort of an adventurous person. So decided to sell my shares in my architecture firm to two of our junior partners and go full-time into software. So I did that come I think it was June at that point of 2007, which started me in a new career. And then I had to figure out how I identify myself, because, you know, I started to fly around and visit a lot of our customers and understand what they were doing with our software. And people on the plane would say, so what do you do? And then I'd have to say, I guess I'm an architect, but I'm a software developer. And it was a real identity problem for me because as architects, we really identify with what we are, what we do. It's a part of our id, our being. And now I discovered I'm actually what I call a recovering architect, which is I still have the passion and the desire to surround myself and with architecture, but don't really indulge in it on a day-to-day basis. So that led me to having the software company, to meeting up with the CEO of a company, a much larger competitor of ours, a BQE Software, another privately held software company out in California. And so we got together following the AIA convention in 2009 in San Francisco. That was the year I became a fellow in the AIA, and I had a lot of responsibilities. I wasn't in my booth as much as I normally intend to be, and so we didn't have as much time to get together and talk. But after the AIA convention, we spent a lot of time talking about our companies and our history, and the CEO of BQE Software was a structural engineer, kind of went down the similar path where he developed software really to run his business and turned that into, and basically morphed his life. The long story short is we decided to be acquired by BQE Software. So ArchiOffice, and we have another product called Engineer Office, then became part of the brands at BQE Software. My team, for the most part, remained in Chicago. I moved out here to Los Angeles to join BQE Software, where I'm today. So that is the long, sorry if it was too long for you, but the long history to get you up to date from where I started to where I am today at BQE.
Definitely not too long. Very, very interesting story. It sounds like a story of connections. Like many of your advancements were the result of reaching out to other people.
Oh, sure. What else is there? Other than, I mean, if we knew where we were going to be, today, if I knew where I was going to be in 5 years from now, that wouldn't be much of an adventure. So great pleasure in our lives are meeting, our clients and doing our projects and meeting all the people we do business with, and something happens and you go down a different branch, and that makes life so much more exciting. So I have zero regrets at all, but grateful for, the kind of interesting path I've followed, and I continue to look forward to the future.
Yeah, I agree that reaching out and connecting with other people are the things that help people and businesses advance. But I'm not sure every architect does that. I think many architects kind of have their blinders on and they do their architecture and they just sort of get into a routine and that's pretty much all they do. And they don't really look beyond what they do every day to see the possibilities of what could be beyond that.
Perhaps, but that's sort of strange, in that I would think so much about architecture is looking and seeing and, appropriating and reinventing and building on things. And, you need things to build on. And the people we meet and the people we do business with, those are things that we build on. So I would think it would be a natural part of one's way of doing things, whether it's as an architect and putting together buildings out of lots of little pieces, or dealing with your business and your life by putting together lots of people to help make the creation that will end up being, your career and your life.
Yeah. Was it difficult in 2007 to make the decision to leave architecture to go full time into software?
Strangely enough, no. You would think it would be. A lot of people kept saying to me, man, aren't you going to miss design? But I always looked at software as design. And in fact, depending on the scale of architecture that you work on, your projects that you design can impact dozens to tens of thousands or to millions of people. In doing the sort of residential work that we were doing, my work did have an impact on lives, but it was a very small group of people. As a software designer, which is kind of what I do, I impact the lives of actually tens of thousands of people every single day. So for me, I still look at software as, there is this experience. You are not moving through space, but you are involved with interacting with something, and that's a, those are design decisions that you have to make every step of the way. So I never saw it as an issue. Frankly, I kind of liked leaving architecture because I was never great with clients. A lot of high net worth individuals whose homes we would do are very difficult people to work for. And probably a lot of people are smiling if they're still listening to this. But it's you know, oftentimes a clash of I wasn't the best. I should have taken psychology when I was in college. I never did. So I was never really great with reading the signals of my clients. So having to no longer work specifically with those kinds of people was not something it didn't bother me leaving that per se. But yeah, I still feel like I design every single day.
Yeah, that's very interesting. The software that you developed, could you talk a little bit more about the specifics of what it does and how it works?
Well, what I looked at it as is, I said, well, I'm a right brain kind of guy. I really love seeing things from that side of the world. But there's a lot of things that one is responsible to take care of in their business, and to neglect it or neglect it entirely means you probably don't have a very sustainable business and you're just lucky. So people who are successful in business when the economy is great are probably not necessarily can attribute their success to the fact that they're good business people. It's just they happen to be in the right place at the right time and they're moving with the current. But when business goes bad or times go bad and the economy is tough, and your business doesn't really run, doesn't have the sort of the back office isn't really set up as well as it should, then you learn the hard way that you are actually just maybe a great architect, a great designer, a great people person, but running the business was maybe not your forte, and that's where your Achilles heel is in your business. So as we all probably saw in 2008 and 2009, a lot of firms learned that lesson the hard way. And so the software was intended for me to take away those pain points that I was having. You know, I was spending every single month I had to get the billings out. And yes, while we had a small handful of projects early on, you know, maybe five or six or seven projects that we were working at one time, you know, when we grew to 14, 15, 17 people, we were really running, you know, 20 projects, 25 to 30 projects in a month and getting those billings out. It was as mundane as getting invoicing out that really probably started this process for me. It was such a burden to me. And looking at what was done that month, you know, what kind of a contract did I have? Was it an hourly contract, or did we have a fixed fee or a percentage of cost of construction or whatever these things were? And do we have some additional services and how would I bill those? It took me away from the fun stuff of being an architect to the drudge work. So the software was intended to help me make that really easy and fast. And I love one of the quotes I got from one of our early customers who was one of those early adopters and bought the first version of ArchiOffice. He said, oh, wow, it used to take me 3 days to do all my invoicing, and now I do it in 3 minutes. And that's the kind of thing I had wanted to hear back then. But it did. Well, you know, on one hand, you say, well, it got me back my life to be an architect, but then maybe it backfired because I'm no longer practicing as an architect. So, but for the time being, it did. It did provide the ability for me to track all of my, I shouldn't say anymore. Let's just talk about ArchiOffice today. ArchiOffice really allows you to track all of your contacts, everyone you do business with, whether they're a client or a vendor, a product rep, you know, a consultant of yours, everything to do with them, all their documentation, any notes you have about them, if they're clients, you know, being able to easily get to every single invoice and the status of that and their payments and not have to deal with accounting software, but to see it in a environment that is, say, architect friendly. I call it front office software as opposed to that accounting software, which is back office. I really wanted everybody in my office to be responsible. You know, no one needed to wait for a week to get a report from a management person to say, hey, your project is, you know, it's, you know, at this particular status. They should always know instantly where things are. So contact management, document management was a very large component to this, because as architects, we are responsible for not only creating a lot of documents, but for managing lots of other people's documents, you know, including our consultants and our clients. And keeping order with those and finding them and creating new documents was a process I wanted to simplify. Obviously, the time tracking and the project billing and budgeting, and another important component was quality control. So we have a checklist system that allows every project to follow a process of what things, what deliverables, what reports, or anything that you really need to do within a phase of a project to do your jobs responsibly as an architect would be managed for you, so you don't get into the design development phase and realize, oh, I forgot to do that zoning and code analysis, and now I violated my setbacks or my height limitations, and I got to redesign stuff. So quality control was another key aspect to it. And, you know, a little bit to do with scheduling and those kinds of things were really the things that we built into ArchiOffice.
So it really is a business system software for small firm architects. It basically covers everything that you need from a business point of view to run a small firm, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, just about, but also with the kind of skew it so that it's really designed around the needs and the mentality of an architect. So it's a very aesthetic environment as well, because, you know, I think architects are pretty sensitive to the look, you know, not just the functionality, but, you know, if I'm going to spend a lot of time using a particular software or put myself inside of a building, I'm going to make the darn best looking place I can put myself in. So it's designed not just to do the functions that, you know, people with maybe an MBA might be looking for, but with that particular little twist that makes it appealing to an architect, because they don't normally get attracted to data. They're not really interested that much in, you know, understanding the numbers so much. But if you can present it to them in a way that it actually, maybe it is a little bit sexy, then they would be more inclined to use the software and hopefully benefit from, you know, what value it would bring to your business.
Yeah, I would think that the design of it for architects and designers is critical. I don't intend this whole episode to be a commercial for the software, but I'm very interested in what it is and how it works. So we're going to keep talking about it. The transition from the lack of systems or the sort of created systems along the way, the hand manual systems that many architects use, the transition from that to the new software, is that how difficult is it to kind of get ramped up into it?
Well, that's a really great question. I'm glad you asked that, because oftentimes what we look at in our own company, if we are working with an architectural firm and they're evaluating our software and they decide, you know what, we're not going to, you know, implement your software, and we'll talk about, you know, what happened, what's the competition, what are they doing? They don't often leave for the competition. What happens is I refer to it as the status quo. They basically, the process of changing is often very, very difficult for people. Yeah. It's a cultural change sometimes. The business may have been around for many years, or there are a few people in the company who won't embrace change. So it is important that the firm is welcoming change and not feeling like it's being imposed on them. For us, it's always important when we are working with a prospect, a firm that's considering our software, to make sure that the folks at the top of the firm are going to endorse this and actually help make this migration possible for their firm. So that's the only way it's going to be successful. So the top has to embrace it, and then everybody in the firm has to then understand, implementing the software in our firm, what value will it bring to me in my day? You know, everybody's about themselves. Like, what am I going to get out of it? And maybe an analogy to help understand this is if any firm has ever gone through the process of changing their CAD software, you know how difficult this is. For years and years, your staff may have been working in a particular CAD software. I won't mention any names, but then you realize, oh, there's another product out there that really will help us do it better, or does it better, so we're going to change. And everybody knows they've got deadlines that they're working on. You know, they got their own deliverables, and they can do it a whole lot faster in that old software. And as long as you leave that software for them, they'll open up their old CAD software, they'll get those drawings done, and then they'll very difficult transition. It'll take a very, very long time. And so as long as everybody understands that what the big picture, what the long-term prospect is, then getting them over that short-term pain of changing systems is understood by them, and they realize, oh, so I'm going to have this short period where my favorite tools are taken away from me, but as soon as I learn those, you know, how to do these drawings with this new CAD software, it's going to be so much faster. So that's what we, that's one of the things we do is have to deal with their change in their culture from, you know, from the very top of the firm to maybe even a young intern, understanding and appreciating why they should be doing and using the software and what benefit they will get and what benefit the firm in general will get. And as long as the firm is stronger and healthier, everybody should get on board that particular train.
Yeah, I think it took architects a long time to go from hand drafting to CAD drafting. I think that as architects become more and more aware of the importance of building strong businesses, that business software is going to be one of those things that is eventually will become a norm for small firms. But we'll take a long time to get past the fear of diving into it unless you start with it. Is there a cloud version of it?
Yeah, well, BQE Software has a number of products. ArchiOffice is just one of those products. It's my particular baby, and I like to focus in on it, and I think it would resonate very well with your listeners. It's called a web application. So it really needs no software. None of the employees, what you would call a client, the person who accesses the software, needs anything. All they really need is a browser. So it runs in a browser, which is basically referred to as a web application. Mm-hmm. Now, the fact that it is cloud-based is really up to the particular firm and how they want to deploy it. Most firms are, you know, our typical firm is, you know, 5 to 8 employees. You know, we'll have firms with well over 100 seats, but the average, when you think about the average firm in this country, is also quite small, is very small. And so they're really, you know, their needs might be very simple and their budgets might be very low. And so for them to deploy the web app locally and not up in the cloud might suit them. And so they'll just take a computer in their firm and, you know, turn it into an ArchiOffice server, and then it basically is hosting the web app, and all of their staff would be able to access it, whether they're locally or remote. Doesn't really matter. These things can be managed depending on their how their internet service works for their, you know, in their locale. But they would have a switch that would know, oh, this guy's outside the office, and this is where he can find our firm's ArchiOffice database. Other firms, and generally speaking, these are the larger firms that might have offices in multiple cities or continents, and they don't think it makes any sense for them to host it in their New York office. So they will put it up in what's called managed hosting services up in the cloud. So that's nice. They don't have any hardware to be responsible for. They don't have to run any of their own updates and backups. So they leave that to a company, you know, like Rackspace. There's a lot of other companies out there that will host your cloud for you, Amazon, and so forth. So they'll put it up in the cloud if they want to, but it's really up to the firm and their needs. And a lot of people think with cloud computing today, it's sort of a subscription-based thing that, you know, we'll just do it, you know, monthly and so forth. And so we've actually changed our own sales model to allow our customers to basically subscribe to the software, even though they will deploy it themselves, either locally or in the cloud. They don't have to make this large investment in purchasing, you know, this big capital purchase of some sort of software. They can simply run it as a subscription, like you would with, you know, a lot of the, you're probably all very familiar with other subscription services out there for software.
Right. AutoCAD runs a subscription service.
Yeah, sure. And I think everybody's kind of moving to that model. Everybody's becoming accustomed that they don't have to make this major investment, but maybe They could see it easily that, oh, gee, you know, each one of my staff is, you know, it's going to cost X dollars a month to keep him using my software. And it's also nice because a lot of architects in the summer might bring on some interns and they don't want to have to buy seats of software anymore for these guys because they may not be around in 2 or 3 months. So they can just add seats and drop the seats if they need to.
So my firm, I moved from a 2,000 square foot office with a bunch of staff in a big room to a virtual model where we moved to a small studio where I'm doing it separately in my own studio and my staff is now remote in their own studios. And I'm doing most of my work through Dropbox and Evernote and through email and Skype. And I think that's going to be much more common and much more popular for small firms as we grow in order to reduce overhead because the tools are becoming more mature and it just makes sense from a business point of view.
Sure.
Is this type of software, without sort of having it on a hosted server somewhere, can it be installed in a Dropbox or accessed? Like you said, it's a web app, so. Like,
well, it wouldn't be, the software wouldn't run in a Dropbox, but I think we do have customers who actually use Dropbox for their document management system. It's tricky, but it allows them to not only have nice backups of it, but everybody can have access to it where it's up in the cloud, that all their files are up in the cloud as opposed to being behind a firewall in their own office and, right. You know, difficult to manage. But the way you are describing it, and by the way, I love Evernote. I'm a huge fan of Evernote. Is I think the way people are moving today, they finally have become accustomed to living in the internet. I do remember when we started, and we made the decision not to be reliant on the internet because people still had, some people even still had dial-up modems back then, and in the late 90s, and nobody had reliable internet service back then, and we had some customers who complained that, you know, their internet was not always working well in their building and it got throttled back. But I think everybody today is finally on board with this, and the technology's gotten to the point where we can move large data files really quite quickly over the internet. But you using ArchiOffice to run your firm, it doesn't mean you can't continue to use Dropbox and Evernote and those sorts of things. But not everything is going to be integrated with ArchiOffice either. I'm not going to delude myself to thinking that there's one solution to take care of everything. I've actually had firms say, you know what, we're not going to actually implement the software until it can do everything. We want it to control all of our BIM stuff and our CAD drawings and basically I don't want anybody to be in any application but in ArchiOffice, and it should be able to control everything, which is unrealistic and a place where no one is ever going to go. But that's, I think people need to appreciate that not everything is a Swiss Army knife can't do everything for you, and you're going to sometimes have to put that tool down and pick up something else to get the job done.
So would it work well with a firm like mine that's spread out across whole country?
Absolutely, it's perfect for. I feel like Mark, I'm not doing a sales pitch for you at all. But maybe later we should do a demo together and demonstrate it for you. But absolutely. We expect teams to be remote. I mean, since it runs on a browser, in fact, we expect people to be on their iPad on a job site and need to access last week's field report or something like that.
That's exactly what I'm thinking, yeah.
Right. Having to be sitting at a desk, 25 feet away from somebody else isn't the way we're moving. And it doesn't – I mean, even if you do have a firm like that, that's great. If you don't, that's fine too.
Right. Okay. Are there other softwares, from a small firm point of view, how important is software to the success of a small firm from your point of view?
What kind of software do you mean? Do you mean the kind that I'm talking about
software? I mean, I think a lot of small firms, they're running AutoCAD or they're running some sort of BIM program, and they may be running QuickBooks. Some of them may be running QuickBooks. And I think everything else is manual. And I think that one of the things that I try to encourage architects, small firm architects and sole proprietors to do is to really focus on business systems. And that's really what your your software is doing, but there's other software, like an Evernote that can be integrated into the systems of a business. Are there other softwares that you would know about that might be useful for small firm architects that they may need to know about?
Oh yeah. I mean, if you're looking for a list of like my favorite software things, I'm always trying new things. And one of the interesting things is a lot of, maybe you've all experienced this with your smartphones. I happen to use an iPhone, but that doesn't really much matter what you use. I think I have downloaded more apps on my mobile devices and deleted them than I have still sitting on my device. So the fact is that there's a lot of really great stuff out there, but will you use it for the long term is really a critical question. Now, certainly for me, Evernote is one of those things. It came on early. It is brilliant, and they continue to build on what you can do with it. So that still sits on my iPad and my iPhone and on my computer, and I use it not every day, but I do use it and rely on it quite frequently. So there's a lot more that I have tried that I thought I had great hope for that I have since discontinued. I'm a big fan of really actually the opposite of what I was talking about earlier. You know, rather than just one program that does everything, I actually think like things like Wunderlist is one of my favorite little applications. It's a web app and it's a mobile app as well that I use every single day, all day long. I'm using Wunderlist now. And I've been using it for maybe a year, which is a pretty long time to, for adopting an app and continuing to use it. Dropbox.
What does Wunderlist do?
Oh, it's there's so many companies out there that have built ways to manage your lists, but Wunderlist, is a wonderful way to manage lists and categorize them and share them with people and be reminded by them. But it's so fast and easy to use. It's not overly, over the top, where they put too many bells and whistles on it so that you get to the point where like any software. It's like, how many of us use publish and subscribe in Microsoft Word or something like that? There's like so many things that you can do with a lot of software, but our general needs are pretty simple. So check out Wunderlist, W-U-N-D-E-R list. That's kind of top of mind right now, and I'm hoping one day that we all get rid of email. Email is like the bane of my existence, and maybe for a lot of people as well. It occupies so much time, and I remember reading a book by Nicholas Negroponte, who wrote a book called Being Digital, and he wrote it, I don't know, almost 30 years ago. He's the fellow who created the Media Lab at MIT, and he had talked about fax machines, I think is what it was, about how fax machines have really hurt technology and progress. And you think about it, people would write up, or maybe those days they either wrote it on a computer and they printed it out and then they put it in a fax machine and it got to the other end and then somebody had to type it back up or do something with it, and they were going back and forth through faxes. And email, at the time he wrote this book, was, the hot new thing coming up, and it made so much more sense, right? Everything was always digital, right? Instead of going from bits to bytes and back to bits and so forth like that. And I think email is like one of those things that I can't wait for it to go away. And there's now much more sort of chat technology that's available to us. And I love HipChat, HIP chat. It's a great way for our teams to collaborate here and not have to keep passing back documents and, we'll be looking through miles and massive amounts of email threads with thousands of these little attachments constantly. So I think chat technology will be being embraced more, and we'll drop that. Like people, I don't know how many people in your listening group who still have fax machines, but, hopefully the email will go away, in my lifetime.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
You too.
Oh, so much time sifting through the things that are especially with the firm and with Entrepreneur Architect, I get hit twice and I have to kind of go through all of it in order to find the things that are important.
Yeah, and good luck when you have to take a day or two off and you come back and there's like 600 hundreds, emails waiting for your immediate response.
Right,
have you ever filed for email bankruptcy?
and just deleted everything?
Well, yeah, what you do is you realize your inbox is so full that you would never really get anything done, and you'd have to stop everything and spend, you know, days. So what you do is you just send an email out to everybody. Say, hey, folks, I've declared email bankruptcy. If you had an important thing that you really wanted me to deal with, please resend it. And then you just delete your inbox.
That's a great idea. I've never heard of that before. I once had it involuntarily happen where my computer crashed and I lost everything. It was from an email point of view, it may have been the best day of my life.
Right.
So this has been very, very interesting. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but thank you very much for being with me today.
Mark, absolutely. My pleasure. It was a lot less painful than I thought. So this was actually really a good way for me to spend nearly an hour with you. So hopefully it was useful for you and your listeners got something valuable.
Yeah, I think it was very useful. And I appreciate you taking some time on Archie Office, because it's something that I've been interested in for a while and never really understood it. And I think it may help a lot of architects. So thanks for talking about it a little bit.
My pleasure. I'll see you in Chicago at AIA convention,
right? I'll be there. I'll look for you.
We'll get together. Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you too.
Bye-bye. I thought it would be interesting to chat with Stephen to learn about how he moved from being an architect to a full-time software developer and how he felt about making that move. Because I know that there are many architects out there that have a passion for something other than architecture and have too much fear or too much guilt to pursue their true purpose. And you know who you are. I thank Stephen for sharing his story with us and for sharing a few details about Archie Office. Are you running Archie Office in your firm or another package to manage your business systems? Because I'd love to know how software is helping your firm succeed. Please click over to the post for this episode on the blog at entrearchitect.com/episode28 and share your thoughts. And don't forget, visit iTunes and leave a review or a rating for the show. entrearchitect.com/iTunes. That'll send you to my iTunes page on the web. Just click on the View in iTunes button on that page and it will open up your iTunes app where you can leave your review for the show. If you like what I'm doing here on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, please, please show your love on iTunes. And I thank you very, very much for that. So that's a wrap. Until next week, my name is Mark R. LePage. And I am an entrepreneur architect. Thanks for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.